Welcome to our Sunday sit. It's really nice to see you this morning. And I'm Lyndall, and I'm one of the SIMS assistant teachers, and I'm going to be leading the meditation and giving the Dharma talk today. So let's begin. So as this year, as many of you might already know, we have a new and really exciting theme, I think, Transcendent Dependent Origination, or Transcendental Dependent Arising, as it's sometimes called, and I think it's referred to on the web page. I'm going to be saying Transcendent Dependent Origination because that's what I started with and put in my talk. So either way, it's the same thing. And so this teaching is actually pretty interesting because it's something that isn't so familiar to most of us. To be honest, I don't remember that we've ever covered it at SIMS, and I've been with SIMS for a really long time, so I think if we did, I would probably remember something about it. So there's going to be a lot that is new here for everybody. So last week, I know that Nana gave an introduction to this topic, and so did Twary on Monday, and I was out of town visiting my cousin for the New Year's holiday, so I wasn't able to hear these talks, and so I won't be able to relate what I say today with what they said earlier in the week. But I hope that what I have to say will still be helpful and it won't be too repetitious. If it's a little bit repetitious, hopefully that's okay. You know, the good thing is that these teachings are kind of new, and so a little repetition is probably a good thing since we haven't heard a lot about them for many of us. So today I wanted to talk a little bit about the transcendental dependent origination in general, and then talk a little bit about the first link of suffering. Now, I think that many of you have probably heard about dependent origination. A few years ago, we had a whole series on dependent origination at SIMS, and even if you weren't there for that, you may have heard about it somewhere from somebody. So dependent origination is a description of the cycle of cause and effect that keeps us trapped in samsara, keeps us trapped in this kind of cycle of suffering. And the foundations of this cycle really are ignorance. We're in this body with its sense doors, with the past conditioning we carry with us. This is where we kind of coming into this cycle, and we come in contact with something through our senses. Seeing, hearing, tasting, maybe in the mind. And we sense that thing as being something that's pleasant or unpleasant or maybe neutral. And if it's pleasant, we want it. We find ourselves struggling to get the present thing, pleasant thing. We find ourselves clinging to it when we do get it. And then there is this phase of becoming where we identify as the self who wants this, or the self who has this, or the self who doesn't have this, the self who is this, or who isn't that, based on this. These things that we want or want to be. But of course, inevitably things change, and no matter how much we try to hang on, this pleasant thing or this pleasant idea we have about ourselves changes or it ends, and the me we build around it crumbles. But because there's ignorance, we don't realize that. The cycle just begins again. We go off after the next pleasant thing, and the next pleasant thing, again and again, always searching for that something that's going to keep us happy always and never being satisfied. Transcendental dependent origination, on the other hand, is a path of cause and effect that leads us out of that endless cycle of samsara and into liberation. So this is a really beautiful topic and a really inspiring topic. It's really the liberation teachings of the Buddha. So we're getting down to the exciting stuff here. And it's a really good topic too, I think, to discuss after spending a year working with the Four Noble Truths. So over this year with the Four Noble Truths, we learned about the important teachings that we need to understand. Dukkha, or suffering, the cause of dukkha and the end of dukkha. And then for most of this year that's just gone past, we've been working with the Eightfold Path that tells us the things we need to do in order to actually realize the end of dukkha. We need to develop wisdom. We need to work on our conduct so we're not harming ourselves or others. And also, we need to work on our meditation practice so we can see clearly the way things are. And all three of these aspects are really important to realize the truth of the Dharma in our own lives. So with the Four Noble Truths, we have this kind of picture of what we need to do in our practice. Transcendental dependent origination is a little bit different because instead of telling us things that we need to do or know, it more describes our experience on the path. So it's really complementary, but not quite the same. And it describes various phases we go through as we take up and follow the path, which each of these different mind states or understandings conditioning the arising of the next one. And as you might remember, if you were here last week, I'm not sure exactly how Nana talked about this, but this is the progression. As I mentioned before, it starts with suffering or dukkha, then there's faith, then joy, then rapture, then tranquility, then happiness, then concentration, then knowledge and vision of things as they are, disenchantment, dispassion, freedom, and knowledge of endings of the taints, which are craving for sense pleasure, craving for becoming, and ignorance and wrong view. And as I've been thinking about this progression, it's occurred to me that there are three ways that we might think about it and work with it over the coming year. First, we can think of transcendent dependent origination as a kind of a map or description of how our practice naturally unfolds over time, kind of like I've just been talking about it. And I think this is probably how, when we first hear about this chain, you know, we typically see it or think about it, and maybe it's how it's often presented to us. So in this sequence, as I mentioned before, we start with suffering. We recognize our suffering. We realize that what we've been doing in our life, you know, kind of chasing after the pleasant or the conditions we feel or the self we feel is going to be ideal, isn't really working. And we begin to search for some way to actually find freedom from the suffering and discontent that we experience. And then comes faith. We find out that there is a path. We're exposed to the Buddha's teachings, and we have enough faith to try them out for ourselves and see if they work. And then comes joy. The joy we feel as we start to see the benefits and the potential of the practice. This could be the joy we have from bringing the precepts into our lives. So we're behaving in ways that are likely to lead to less harm to ourselves and less harm for others. I went to a day-long retreat with the BCIMS, and one of the things that came up was this teaching of the Buddha that if we just practice the five precepts, we're bringing relief to innumerable beings. So we're helping innumerable beings just practicing the precepts, and that's pretty inspiring right there. Or the joy we feel might be the taste of calm we feel in meditation, or the happiness of feeling that we finally have some direction in our life, even if we aren't quite sure how this whole project is going to turn out yet. Or it might be kind of similar to the joy that we feel when we have what is called bright faith. You know, this faith that we have when we're pretty new to the practice. We haven't experienced a lot for ourselves, but we're really inspired by what we hear about it and by the examples of our teachers. Then comes rapture, or piti. And in his commentary on this sutta on transcendental dependent origination, Bhikkhu Bodhi suggests that this kind of rapture is something that arises as we really begin to practice meditation seriously. And I think this is true, but I think there are some forms of piti that might appear off as well as on the cushion. You know, it can appear in different forms. You know, it can be, you know, a lot of excitement and energy in the body, which we're more likely to feel when we're in formal practice. But another good description of one aspect of PT or rapture is joyful interest. And I love that, joyful interest. You know, the excitement we feel when we really begin to connect directly with our present moment experience, and our mind just really feels happy, it feels delighted just to know on this really intimate way. Next is tranquility, a sense of calm and peace we experience when this excitement of the piti begins to settle down. Then there is happiness or sukha, a deep feeling of contentment. Then concentration. And this concentration has probably been developing all along, but in this atmosphere of tranquility and contentment, it can really deepen. And as it deepens, we come to the point where we have knowledge and vision of things as they are. And at this point, our mind is steady enough and our concentration is strong enough that we really can see the truth of the way things are directly for ourselves. And typically this means that we see really clearly one or more of the three characteristics for ourselves: dukkha, anicca or impermanence, anatta or not self. And after this comes disenchantment. And this isn't a sort of feeling of, oh, everything is terrible, but it's more the disenchantment that comes really naturally from seeing how impermanent all those pleasant things that we've been chasing after really are. We see that they can't be a source of permanent happiness. So it's not that we hate these things, but it's more like we see them more realistically. So we're not so enchanted and carried away with them. Then there's dispassion. So we're no longer caught up in this obsession to get this pleasant thing, get rid of that pleasant thing. And then freedom. Freedom from all that dukkha that goes along with craving and aversion and delusion. And finally, there's the knowledge of ending, of that craving for sense pleasure, craving for becoming, the ending of all that ignorance and delusion. So you might say that this step is knowing that we really do have freedom. You might notice as you consider this path how nicely it flows from our focus last month on concentration. And this path too really emphasizes connecting with the happiness we feel when we have a steady and unified mind. These qualities of joy, rapture, happiness, tranquility. All of these are factors of awakening, and they're all things that come up naturally in the mind when we steady the mind and their concentration deepens. So in this path, the happy and contented mind is the mind that easily moves to deeper concentration. And we see here too that at a certain point, this concentration is turned to mindful observation, to seeing deeply the truth of the way things are. So in many ways, this focus on transcendent dependent origination will be a really natural transition from the Eightfold Path. And it's a subject we're really ready to work with after all of our immersion in the Four Noble Truths. It's just kind of natural to continue in this way. Now, the path that's described in Transcendent Dependent Origination might sound a little bit familiar to you. It isn't so different from the path we studied a few years ago when we worked with the ox herding pictures. And with the ox herding pictures, it's kind of a similar progression from feeling lost and confused about life to finding a path, practicing, experiencing some joy and tranquility as we follow that path, and finally this clear knowing of the way things are that leads to freedom. And there are elements of this transcendent dependent arising in the Anapanasati Sutta too that we worked with last month when we were practicing concentration. And we see this because transcendent dependent origination and with the Anapanasati, we move from developing concentration on the breath through joy, through rapture, and finally to knowing the truth of impermanence and the ending of craving and the relinquishment that arises from that. So it's kind of a similar trend. And if you're familiar with the teachings of Mahasi Sayadaw from Burma and you've heard about the progression of insight, similar kinds of trends in there too. So each of these different paths are a little different. They're not quite the same. They might have a little bit different organization or elements, but they all have certain things in common. You know, recognizing our suffering, coming to practice, studying and stabilizing the mind, and then seeing the truth from that place of concentration and clarity, and then finding freedoms from suffering through that understanding because of what we see. So I think having a description of a path like this can be really helpful. We can see how our practice has this kind of natural unfolding and a process that really kind of is logical and makes sense. And when we recognize certain elements in the path in our own practice, this can really strengthen our faith and give us a sense that, you know, yeah, this is really working. It's really working. And it's also a very inspiring path because it reminds us that freedom really is possible, not only in small ways, but in a really big way, you know, in the ultimate way. And that's really exciting. It is worth saying, though, that there are skillful and unskillful ways to work with a path like this. And we have to remember that the exact unfolding of our path of practice is a little different for each of us. So if we take this description we are going to be working with this year, or any description, as a list of states we need to make happen, or tasks we need to accomplish, or experiences that we have to have, we're bound to find ourselves in trouble. Trying to make things happen really only makes the going more difficult for us, because when we really do that, it interferes with the relaxation and the joy that help us to actually have the concentration we need to deepen. And it interferes with our ability to really connect with what's occurring in the present moment, because we're so busy looking for that next thing that we think is supposed to be happening. So if you find yourself judging and trying to fix your practice as you consider this progression, I'd advise you to really let that go as much as you possibly can. This is probably a really good time for us to take Philip Moffat's vows of renunciation here, to refrain from judging, comparing, and fixing when it comes to our practice as it relates to this path of transcendent dependent origination. So this is this kind of one way of looking at this path. The second way is to think of this progression as something that we move through over and over every time we recognize that we're stuck in dukkha and we act wisely to find freedom from it. So in this sort of everyday and moment-to-moment sense of it, we start by recognizing that we're suffering, that dukkha is kind of trapping us, that we're stuck in dukkha. And this includes not only what we would consider really deep suffering, but the more subtle feelings we have so often of dissatisfaction, that something's missing, we need something more, we need something better. It's not that things are so terrible, but they really aren't quite the way we want them to be. Then we bring our faith in the practice to bear on the situation, knowing because of our faith that it is possible to find relief. Then we step back a bit. We can take some time to steady our mind, let a sense of calm arise. From this point, we can see clearly what's going on in our life and in our minds. We can see the impermanent nature of whatever we were so upset about having, or the quality in ourselves that we were so upset and distressed about. And as we see it more clearly, we start to lose our obsession with it. We're able to abandon it, and we find freedom, and we know the end of that particular instance of dukkha. And when we go through this process in our day-to-day lives, we might not go through all these steps of joy and rapture and so forth, but I think it's still a good formula for working with dukkha. Recognizing it, stepping back to develop some steadiness of mind and calm, seeing the situation clearly, and then what we see will let us to abandon the craving or aversion, or whatever it is that's got us caught up, so we can respond wisely. And then finally, with the exception of dukkha, we can think about the steps in this sequence simply as beautiful qualities that should be cultivated, much in the same way as we cultivate the paramis. This sounds simple, but I think it could actually be really useful, especially as we work with these qualities in our daily lives over the coming months. In our daily lives, we might not always see these qualities appearing in kind of a sequence or see how they follow on from one another, but they'll definitely appear. And we can definitely encourage them. We can reflect on each of them. We can notice when they naturally arise in our minds and in our practice and appreciate them. We can bring them to mind in situations where they might be helpful. We can find ways to work to develop them more fully. And I think that this might help us to see these elements of transcendent dependent origination is something that's really accessible to us no matter where we are in our practice, not just as a theoretical something that we might experience sometime in the future if we're really dedicated and we're really lucky. You know, we can see it as something we can work with right here and right now. So that's the overview, and now I'd like to say a little bit about suffering, the first step on the path. I don't have a lot to say, and I don't have a lot of time left, so it's good I don't have a lot to say. So one thing we can recognize with suffering is that suffering is present in both transcendent dependent origination and in dependent origination. So in the cycle of dependent origination, we really see this suffering, especially when we get caught up in craving, in longing for the pleasant thing that we don't have, trying to get it, trying to hold on to it. But the difference between these two paths lies in what we do with that suffering. If we're stuck in the cycle of dependent origination, we just follow our habitual patterns. We feel dissatisfied or unhappy because we want something we don't have, so we go out and try to get that thing, and once we get it, we try to hold on to it. And finally, this is really a pretty hopeless task, given the changing nature of everything. But we don't see that. So we go on trying to get to that place where everything's perfect, not recognizing that it can never stay perfect. So we never really get away from that disappointment and dissatisfaction completely. On the other hand, with transcendent dependent origination, we recognize our suffering, but we also recognize that this pattern of pursuing what is pleasant and endlessly going after what we see as more and better isn't really bringing us any lasting happiness. So we try something different. We hear about the teachings of the Buddha. We like what we hear. We start to practice, and that changes the whole trajectory. We're no longer trapped. We have a path to freedom. As I've talked about earlier, this happens on a large scale over the course of our lives, or even over the course of many lives, if you're open to that understanding. And it also happens on a day-to-day scale, a moment-to-moment scale. And I think many of us would agree that it was pain or dissatisfaction with our lives on some level that started us on the path. But as we move along, we continue to notice suffering. There's the inevitable pain and disappointment that we always are going to have with life, as well as that extra mental suffering that goes along with our resistance to what is, with wanting and not wanting, feeling angry that this painful thing is happening when we feel like it shouldn't be happening, the blame we place on others for it, the blame we place on ourselves for it. And when we feel all of this kind of painful stuff happening in our minds, we need to notice this. This is dukkha. This is a sign we need to begin investigating. We need to pause and see what's going on. And we can make that choice. Do we follow the habit patterns and stay caught in samsara? Or do we take a different course and follow the steps of transcendent dependent origination right here in this moment? As I mentioned before, maybe we take a little time to pause to calm the mind. And from that place we see clearly, oh, I'm caught up in wanting something that I don't really need. I'm getting angry about a situation that's really out of my control. I'm taking whatever is happening too personally when it really isn't all about me. Whatever it might be, we can see that in this situation, craving, aversion, and delusion are all active. And when we recognize these forces, we can say, I see you, Mara, I see you. And when we see, then we aren't fooled and we get some freedom. So it's suffering and recognizing our suffering. This is where the turning point really is, the point where we can choose which way to go and how to respond. And that's true for our lives. It's true moment by moment. So there's a lot to think about here and a lot to work with and to be inspired by as we consider transcendent dependent origination. So I think it's going to be a really rich year for us. So thank you for your kind attention this morning. So now we can start that process of exploration right now with some time for a small group discussion. So I'll break you up into groups of three or four, and we'll have about 15 minutes. And during this time, I'd encourage you to share your thoughts with each other about this path of transcendent dependent origination. You know, how does it sound to you? What inspires you? What confuses you? Can you see your own experiences in this progression? Or, you know, what things do you want to explore? Whatever is coming up for you as it relates to this path. So I think I can begin the groups, remembering our guidelines for discussion as we go into our small groups, letting everyone have a chance to speak without interruption, listening with your full attention as much as you can, maintaining confidentiality within the group if personal things are shared, speaking with kindness, and avoid giving advice unless you are asked for it. So enjoy your conversation, and I'll put you into the groups right now. Welcome back, everybody. I always figure you must be having a good discussion if nobody comes back hardly until the very end when the rooms just close. So that's good. That's good. So now we have some time for you to share anything that you would like to share that you talked about in your groups. If you have questions, you're welcome to answer any questions. Oh, and already Judith is here. You can raise your hand, your little virtual hand in Zoom, or since I can see the whole screen, if you want a wave like that, you can do that too. But raising the virtual hand is good. So, okay, Judith, the floor is yours.
Okay, Lyndall. Well, what I immediately thought about, and actually listening to your talk kind of led me here, because for the last several weeks, my practice has been patience, you know, for two reasons, because I have to give a talk on it on the 20th, but also because I have this broken arm. And I was really aware, listening to you, the role that patience plays in this whole process, right? That we can't necessarily make it happen like you were talking, exactly. You know, talking about, but we have faith that it does happen if we keep practicing. So we keep practicing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And letting go of that attachment to the result, mm-hmm. which is patience, right?
Yeah. Thank you. That is a really good observation. I patience does play a big role in it, because we really do have to let go of looking for the result and just let things unfold naturally.
Right.
And I think it's one of the big lessons to learn in practice is to be able to do that. And we learn it by getting burnt over and over and over again because we're not doing that. So thank you for bringing that up. Yeah, patience is really important. Thomas?
Yeah, thanks a lot. I was part of the talk series that Rodney did a number of years ago, and I think he titled it something like Dependent Ordination. I was pretty new to practice at the time, and I found it complicated, but also very rich, sort of a deepening of my practice. And I especially noticed, I remember I took away sort of the ability of really looking at how a thought might generate a feeling, and a feeling generates feeling in the body, and now the body feeling generates more thought, and it just goes and goes. So that's like a cyclical process. And so it was really helpful here, Lyndall, that you sort of clearly defined that there's the dependent ordination circle, which keeps us in suffering. And then there's the transcendent process where you actually get out of that circle. Mm-hmm. And that I had not captured that earlier. So that was really, really helpful for my understanding. So thanks for that.
Yeah, thank you. And, you know, I don't think it's talked about it very much. I think when people talk about dependent origination, they kind of talk about this point where the pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral is known. And if you just stay there and don't get caught up in the rest of it, the cycle kind of, that karma doesn't go around, you know. But about this whole transcendent path, you don't hear about it so much, which is kind of too bad. Thank you. Suze?
Loved your talk. And I shared in my small group that the first thing that happened for me is feeling the joy of knowing you and having you teach.
Thank you.
That was sweet.
That's very sweet.
I loved how you talked about there are skillful and unskillful ways of working with this. And I shared that in my own practice, I had spent years kind of jumping over dukkha and trying to get into strategies. It was really an aversion practice. And that we can jump over it and not really know it, or we can sink into it as if this dukkha is going to be here forever. It's who I am. It's what it is. This is the way life, you know. And that the skillfully practicing with dukkha to really understand it through the three characteristics, like you were saying, is so essential. And I really appreciated that that part of the talk. And it kind of takes us right back to the very beginning, the first noble truth. And before we understand clinging, we just understand dukkha through the characteristics, I think, is just fabulous. So thank you for bringing up all this stuff around dukkha.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah, it is so important. And like you say, it's really interesting how this really feeds back into the Four Noble Truths. It's all so related, and it makes me really happy that we're having this topic for this year. Candace?
I just wanted to quickly say that as I was listening to you today, I was realizing what's been going on with me as I've had to be on social media a little more than I like to be because of work, and it's been a really hard time to be on it. But what continually helps me is to just, I know that there are these monks walking for peace, and I just go to them, and then I feel okay, and then I'm able to come back to, you know, whatever I'm working with. And I have this intention to be kind and mindful and peaceful. And so they're really helping with transcendent dependent origination.
That's beautiful. That's wonderful. Yeah, we can get that from just inspiration from other people. And maybe we can give that to each other too. That's beautiful. Thank you. And Julie, maybe this should probably be the last comment so I have time for announcements and we end on time. But yes, go ahead, Julie.
Thanks a lot for the talk, Lyndall. That was really great. I appreciate everyone's comments. You know, Sue's bringing up the jumping over dukkha and the ways that we, I think about the ways that I have unskillfully dealt with dukkha, you know, over the years and how long it's taken me. And I was wondering if we could, you know, just have a moment to talk about some skillful, you know, techniques. And then I also really appreciate what Candace said as well, because certainly focusing on those things that was like your sit this morning, you know, paying attention and feeding the heart with these positive qualities. Just talking about some, you know, favorite skillful techniques. We might not have time to do it today, but I think it would be really helpful. Thank you.
Yeah.
And Lyndall, could we keep the sit open for a little bit for anybody who wanted to stay?
Yeah, we can do
just
that.
Just an idea.
Yeah, that's a good idea. We could do that. And then I would
stay for a while.
Okay. Yeah, if you'd like to do that, I can do that. And if just a few of us stay, that's fine. So I will go ahead and do the announcements, and then we can come back and talk about this a little bit more for those who would like to stay. That sounds like a great idea. For those who need to go, I'd like to just take a quick moment to share the merit of our practice. As we do this, you might want to bring to mind a particular being who's on your mind. And for me, I especially wanted to bring to mind our dear teacher, Steve Armstrong, who passed away recently after a long struggle with brain cancer. And he is really missed. So you can think of your own individual for a moment. Share the merit in your own way. And then let's open this offering to all beings. May the beneficial energies that are generated through our practice be for the welfare of all beings, through all realms, and throughout space and time.